Well, it is very systematic. Before one becomes an extremist, majorly he has to be radicalized.
Over the past few years, there has been a rise in the number of extremist groups in Nigeria and the Sahel, such as Boko Haram, Islamic State West Africa Province, ISWAP, Jama'atun Nusrat al-Islam al-Muslimin, JNIM, AGIM, and Ansaru. These groups have been responsible for a series of violent attacks, kidnappings, and other criminal activities, causing widespread fear and insecurity among the local population. They have also caused the death of thousands of people and the displacement of millions. Hello, welcome to The Crisis Room, a podcast from Human Angle. I'm Hawassa Alaabakar, your host. In this podcast, we look at crisis trends across the country and answer the tough questions around them. This week, my colleague Hawassa Afinuhu will be discussing extremism in Africa with a researcher in the field of countering violent extremism.
Hello, I am Hawassa Afinuhu, your host for today. I'm here with Abdul Samad Ahmad. He's a researcher and expert on countering violent extremism, and he works with the Islamic Center for Peacebuilding, Research and Development, based in Nigeria's capital, Abuja. In this episode, we will be exploring the factors that drive people to join extremist religious groups in Nigeria and across the Sahel. Malam Abdul Samad, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So let's go straight to the point. Can you tell us about the factors that drive people to join these extremist religious groups in Nigeria and the Sahel?
Well, some of the major factors that drives people into violent extremism in Africa and Nigeria particularly, the poverty and lack of economic opportunities, and the youth that join those extremist organizations mostly are unemployed, and even some of them that are employed, they are significantly underpaid or unemployed. So these are some of the grievances that drives them to violent extremism. There is also marginalization by a group, a section of them feel marginalized, and in response to that, they cultivate extremist tendencies. There is another dimension to it, which is more of climatic and environmental factor. It's more linked up to the economy. Majorly, those areas where the violent extremists operate run an agrarian economy, and the devastation created by climate and environment, such as flooding, desert encroachment, have affected their farming activities and pastoralism. So I think these are some of the major factors.
That's very interesting. Also very interesting is that you mentioned the marginalization factor. I think I've heard that a lot from people, particularly from the Northwest, as we've seen with the terrorism ravaging the Northwestern region of Nigeria. A lot of the excuses or the factors that we have found in our research and journalism is the feeling of being marginalized and not getting enough support and attention from the government. I'm wondering though, what role does religion play in extremist groups? I'm aware that extremist groups are not always based on religion. They are not always religious. There are lots of extremist groups that do not have anything to do with religion at all. And which is why we have these groups beyond Nigeria's north and even in the southern part. So, but I'm wondering particularly now, what role does religion play in all of this?
Well, it is very systematic. Before one becomes an extremist, majorly he has to be radicalized. And it is more of cognitive and psychosocial manipulation. So that the radicalized feel like he is and the only authority.
Yes.
So religion is used majorly in mobilizing them and recruiting the extremist. It is also used in exerting supremacy of one sect over the other. So this created like a kind of what we can describe as black and white approach. So if it is not me, it's nobody. So this is one of the all.
That's very, very interesting. Are there any other factors that you think are important to consider? I think so far we've spoken about the religion factor, we've spoken about the marginalization factor, and also the economic factor as well.
Well, there is education. There is education. Access to education in those areas that are being affected by violent extremism. Most of the people in those regions lacks access to education. And in that sense, there is only one way for them. So people always look for an alternative. When you didn't feel the vacuum, somebody will come and fill it. So when there is no proper education, somebody will just come and hijack that situation and they'll just follow him.
That's very insightful. I'm wondering, do you have anything to say around the use of social media by these extremist groups? Human Angle recently uncovered how some of these groups use social media, particularly Facebook, to recruit potential members.
Well, yes. I've read one of your research on the use of the social media, especially Facebook. And so it's used as a propaganda platform. They usually make their publications and some of the posts that will lure people into being conscripted into the extremist organizations. So it serves as a propaganda platform for them, where they sell their idea to people. And when it is coupled with that, with the lack of proper education, people just become conscripted into it.
That's true. As we continue to grapple with this issue, it is important to address the root causes of poverty, lack of access to education, and marginalization, just like you have said, while also working to counter extremist ideologies and provide alternative narratives that, you know, promote tolerance and peace amongst people. What are some ways, some practical ways that you think violent extremism can be countered?
Well, the process has to be like two, from the state and from the non-state actors.
Okay.
The state has to ensure that all grievances are addressed, especially of discrimination and marginalization. Access to quality education is provided, and economic opportunities equally, and addressing inequality. Some of the environmental and climatic factors also need to be ameliorated. And from the non-state actors, mostly it has to be the same process they use in radicalizing people should be used to de-radicalize them. What I mean is that where religion plays a role, the religious actors, especially the ulama and our pastors and the like, should be used hugely to provide alternative narratives. Because I'm not a fan of counter-narrative most of the time, because it is in the lack of the alternative that people follow one way. So they need to do that. And community-level engagement also should be used in demobilizing some of these people. Many processes like the Sulhu, other counter or extremism processes should be deployed.
Thank you so much, Malam Abdussamad, for sharing your insights with us. It is clear that the factors that drive people to extremist groups are complex and multifaceted. Thank you so much for joining us today. To listen to the previous Crisis Room episodes, everyone, go to www.humananglemedia.com or go to any major podcast publication platform such as Google and Apple. The producer of today's episode is Anthony Asemota, and the executive producer is Ahmad Salkida. I am Hawa Shafi Inuhu. See you in the next episode.